Dr. Zevni Zoria, Senior Economist in Agriculture and Rural Development Department for the World Bank. Dr. Zoria joined the bank in 2005 through the Young Professionals Program, and prior to the Agriculture and Rural Development Department, he worked in three World Bank regions, Europe and Central Asia, Eastern Asia and Pacific, and Africa. The most recent work has been in South Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda. He holds a master's science degree in agricultural economics from the Agricultural University of Zhytomyr, Ukraine, and PhD in agricultural economics from the George August University in Göttingen, Germany. So I invite Dr. Zoria.
Thank you, Gato. I'm very pleased to be here today. In the RECLA, I'm connected to McGill through my PhD supervisor in Germany, actually graduated from McGill, so very good to mind. I'll talk today on the global food price volatility through the lens, a little bit on the responses by developing countries and the agenda for the donor community, the World Bank and the more broader global community. I'll touch slightly the global food price volatility issue. It was discussed and presented already today, and then also talk about the impacts. So about the impacts of those high and volatile prices on the welfare, especially in the low-income developing countries. I'll talk a little bit, but a little bit through the prism of the differentiation. We have some global estimates, but I guess country by country, one needs to really understand what's going on at the country level. We need to understand the policies and the issues at the country level to develop the responses to that. Developing countries have a mix of the instruments. It's up to them what they use. And I'll talk about the pros and cons of the responses. And also conclude with a few slides what the World Bank does and how we changed in the recent few years to better respond to the new steady state. We don't know how steady it is, but it's sort of new. You've seen those graphs, I guess. The food prices spiked twice since 2004. In 2008, we saw the spike of the grain prices, which drove the overall food prices, agricultural prices. In 2010, the price spike is more broad-based. Is many agricultural, the prices of most agricultural commodities went up, leaving less room for the substitution for the consumers actually to move away from more expensive food to less expensive food. And there are many reasons for that. Many drivers, you know, one need to distinguish between the long-term drivers, which determine the price level, and you have the short-term drivers of the price volatility. The most of those things we know, I mean, what is really new in these last three, inelastic demand from the biofuel industry, stronger links with the more volatile oil prices, and also the financial investments into the commodity. Something new, it's not what the agricultural analyst was used to really incorporate in their models for some time. So it's created uncertainty not only for farmers, but also for us. And biofuels, a lot of discussion with the biofuels, and I put it in the way, in elastic demand from biofuel industry, because this is key. Potentially biofuel can actually contribute to the food security. The ag demand is inelastic, so if one can have additional, more flexible demand source for food, one can increase the elasticity of demand and make the price adjustment to the end shop. But unfortunately, the policies with the mandates make their demand from biofuel industry inelastic, actually not solving the problem of the elasticity, but adding to the problem. But it's there are many factors which affect. I mean, we at the World Bank, we are discussing a lot of reasons why prices went up and down and were volatile. But the story is complex. You look on the major factors which may have impact or may not, and you see on the changes. And one cannot easily attribute to only one. The combination of those which are important. But for us, I guess, what is the most important part, in spite of the fact that we see the, all of the changes in the different potential drivers of the food prices, we shouldn't just move away from the core discussion, agricultural productivity. The fundamental problem is the supply is not catching up with demand. And that's a sort of what should be our concern. Mark Rosengrund from IFPRI made an excellent presentation on the first session showing that 20% increase in agricultural productivity would nullify any negative impact of 60% increase of the energy prices. And that is sort of very strong message. One needs to work on the supply response to ensure that the farmers can respond to the new opportunity, high prices. So what we see, what we likely to see in the future, and how we need to design our policy instruments to help farmers to respond, probably we will see in the next 10 years or so that the supply will not easily match the rising demand. In the long run, the prices will be influenced by the oil prices, increasingly so through the different effects, and we discussed today fertilizers, biofuel, etc. Transport costs, but also, I mean, we hope that again the farmers will be able to ride their total factor productivity, and success will depend on many things: good business policies, open trade, and great investment in agricultural public goods. Without that, very unlikely that many farmers will respond to those better incentives. The volatility of prices make it more difficult to respond, not only through the channels like uncertainty, and it's not easy to invest in over the uncertain environment, but also because the volatility triggers unnecessary policy response like the export bans. And you know, there are discussion how big is the volatility. We've seen this level of the volatility in the past, so it's probably not a big problem, but the problem with the volatility is often unnecessary response, which is not crops. And that's what volatility made things complicated when one thinks about the response to the higher prices. Impacts on the low-income developing countries. Dan discussed that in detail. There are different channels. Certainly, the biggest impacts on the consumers, especially on the nourishment, because it has the lasting effect, not on the short term. For farmers and traders and agribusiness companies, high price volatility and uncertainty make it difficult to invest. And certainly there are the macroeconomic impacts. But the story is, that's a sort of the general story, we know that. But the story is a little bit different country by country. Depending on their trade policy, depending on their share of the cereal imports in total consumption, etc. This graph shows the three-year volatility of maize prices compared to the international price, which is got for maize. And you see, in some countries have low volatility, some countries have higher volatility. And as Dan also mentioned, you know, the food insecurity existed before 2008, and the number of hungry people was 800 million people. And I want to add to this, the volatility existed in developing countries for many years. And I was in Croatia, I was a cultural economist in Uganda and Tanzania for the last 4 years. I mean, the volatility there for the last 25 years. It's just what the global international crisis brought attention to the problem and showed the importance and severity of the problem that we need to now work together to try to solve it. But the volatility existed, and in the country like, you know, Kenya and Ethiopia, volatility is still higher than in the international world market crisis. So they still can rely on the world markets to import lower volatility, still volatility, but they can, if they import, they can able to dampen the volatility compared to where they are right now. Some countries are disconnected from the world markets, and for them the world market price volatility does not really matter in the short term. In the sample of countries and in Africa, recently was done work from 60 out of 62 markets for maize, rice, sorghum, and wheat. Only 13 of those markets are co-integrated with the world market prices. So you see the long-term impact of the world market prices. So in many of the countries, the World Bank and FAO and other international organizations, the source of shocks are usually, in the short term at least, the local shocks. And this is the production, the volatility of production because of the underinvestment in the agriculture, in the public goods related to increase and smoothen volatility. And second is also, you know, the big gap between the import and the export parity. This is the graph for Ethiopia, which shows the huge gap between the export and the import parity prices, which is as a result of the large infrastructure costs and as a result of the high import tariffs. If you have those, and if you have bad harvest, your price is going to jump from the very low export parity level to the very high import parity level, and trade, and international trade, would be not profitable until domestic prices go above the import parity prices. So if you have that huge gap, you have that type of volatility. And that volatility can be reduced only by the investments into the infrastructure and productivity increasing investments. So the responses, the countries have the mix of the instrument they can respond, but taking into account the outlook, high and more volatile prices, there is an opportunity for the low and middle income countries, so they need to explore those opportunities, but they also need to better manage risks. And by managing risks, we've seen the response, and I'll talk a little bit about it, we've seen the response of many countries to the 2008 price spike. It's key one take the ad hoc short-term measures that they not undermine the long-term goals. But I'll talk about it a little bit later. What we know, I guess, we need to invest more, and this is other areas which I need to invest, not much new. But I guess what we try to emphasize in the bank that it's not just invest more, but to invest better. And it's extremely important to design demand-driven research linked with the extension services. In the country Uganda I work, we have 10 zonal agricultural research institutes. And we have the extension services in each zone. You look on the priorities, crop priorities, or whatever agricultural priorities of them, on which type of crops or livestock products they do research, and on which types of the product are promoted by the extension services, you can maximum match 10%. So in the same country, agricultural research is zonal level are different from extension service, etc. You build roads. I mean, in Tanzania, all administrative centers are interconnected, great. But the rural connectivity is very, very low. So you have roads, but you have rural connectivity. So the point is, or in West Africa, you improve the quality of roads, but the trucks industry is monopolized. So whatever the reduction of the transport cost from better roads are, they get all captured by the transport sector, not by the end user, etc. So investing more is fine, but investing better is the key, which going to bring you a little bit, because there are a lot of students around. What we wanted to do, we wanted to increase the elasticity of supply response, make the system much more responsive to the shocks, and then they can react. Short-term responses are necessary, but again, they have to support the long-term objectives. And from my slides, I guess my understanding they will be distributed later. There are different options, and some of them are good, some of them are harm, I guess. And it's up to the country again, but we try to help the countries to pick the right policies. What the bank does, it's a great little bit of 4 minutes left. What the bank does, we actually Rob Thompson in his presentation in the last session talked about the decline of the international spending on aid on agriculture over time, I guess 3 or 4 times reduction, but it was before 2006. Starting from 2006, the World Bank increased annual lending in the last 3 years. We went up from $4.1 billion to $7.3 and $6.1. So we increased a lot. We do a lot. We focus more on the longer-term investment. It's 85% of our portfolio. The most money go to the productivity and markets. In the agriculture, taking into account the importance of the supply response and the total debt to productivity growth. In addition to our core portfolio, to our lending, we strengthen the partnerships for the aid effectiveness. We have the global, we host the global agricultural food security program in the World Bank, where the donors committed to provide additional financing to scale up. And I'm very happy to see Canada as one of the big donors of these funds, and we were able to allocate now funds to 12 countries, and they are well prepared and owned agricultural projects. In addition to our long-term response, we also provide countries the help in the short term when they need the emergency response. And in the last 2 years, we provided $1.5 billion. And again, Canada is one of the big donors to these programs, so we are very grateful. And we also try to make the G20, let's say, the platform for the global actions. And one of the things which we work together with our partners, especially FAO, is to improve the transparency of the agricultural markets. And G20 launched the initiative of the better collection of the data from the key producing and consuming countries for grains and soybeans to understand how much food is produced, how much food is stocked, etc., in the real time, so we can better understand. But also, even more important, to have the platform for the key policymakers to talk early, face-to-face discussion, to avert the unnecessary reaction which we have seen in 2008 on the rice market, for example. And finally, the other initiatives we try to work with on the global level is try to develop a toolbox for the agricultural risk management mechanism. It's not easy. The instruments are available for the risk management. They are not often used a lot, even in the developed countries, due to the number of reasons. It's more difficult to implement them in the developing countries. But we try to adapt on the pilot basis to try to see what we can do. And we also work on the agricultural pool mechanism again with Canada and quite successful cooperation with Canada. Thank you very much.